That's not fair. Have you ever heard that statement? You've probably even made it, not? That's just not fair. You gave him 3 cookies and me 2. Or I doubt it's ever that you gave him 2 and me 3, and that's not fair. We usually don't go that way, do we? As human beings, we tend to be selfish, right? I think we all understand that. Thinking a little bit about fairness and so on, that's kind of where my mind went when I was thinking about equal rights. Equal rights, what were they about? Just to recap a little bit, last evening the topic exposed the idea that the 1960s were a decade of change. There was a lot of change happened in the 1960s. There was a lot of protests, a lot of rising up against authority and so on. One of the changes I'd like to look at tonight is this thing of equal rights. Equal rights, civil rights, voting rights, what's that all have to do with each other? Well, to go back previous to the 1960s, the U.S. was a fairly conservative-minded nation. As a whole, society was that way. And then we had all kinds of protests against things that were, and we ought to change this, and so on. And one of those was equal rights. Now, when I first began studying for this topic, I thought equal rights was equality for everyone. And I don't think that was quite true. I don't think that was a right concept. What was the equal rights agenda? Well, let's start back just a little earlier than when the Equal Rights Amendment was proposed. In 64, we had the Civil Rights Act. And that ended segregation in public places, not necessarily private places, but it ended segregation in public places and banned employment discrimination on the basis of race, color, gender, national origin, and so on. So that was civil rights, segregation and employment discrimination. Then in 65, we had the Voting Rights Act, was signed into law by President Lyndon Johnson. And that was aimed to overcome the legal barriers at the state and local levels that prevented the African Americans from exercising their right to vote. I believe that was some of those local laws, state laws, were referred to as the Jim Crow laws. Okay, so 64 was the Civil Rights Act, 65 was the Voting Rights Act, and then we come to the Equal Rights Amendment, and that was aimed at gender equality. Again, the Civil Rights Act was sort of aimed at breaking down those barriers, that inequality with gender, but it encompassed, it was more to do with segregation and employment discrimination. But then when we come to the Equal Rights Amendment, that was aimed simply at gender equality across the board. What wasn't equal? What wasn't equal prior to 1960? What wasn't right? Well, there was definitely a difference. We know that women didn't have the right to vote. This was early on in U.S. history. There was even the prevalent attitude that ladies were the property of men. Even though you were married, your wife was your property more so than what I believe our churches practice today. I'm very comfortable with where our churches are practicing it. I'm glad we're not practicing having our sisters as property. Was this really needful, though? Was the Equal Rights Amendment needed? Actually, the Equal Rights Amendment was never ratified by the whole nation. I don't know if you ever knew that or not. It was passed by the federal government, but then sent out to the states for ratification, and it never received that by the deadlines it was given. They had set the deadline that it needed to, let's see, the Equal Rights Amendment was approved in 72. So this is actually after the 60s, you might say, but it got its oomph during the 60s. And that's when the federal government approved it, was 72. And they said, we need 2/3 of the states to ratify it by 79. So that's 7 years later. It didn't happen. There wasn't enough states that said, yep, that's the way to go. And so Congress extended that until 1982, the year I was born. But it still didn't receive enough votes or enough ratification from enough states. And so, truth be told, gender equality is not protected by the U.S. Constitution. Now, there are plenty of state laws and local laws that provide that for us, but it's not protected by the U.S. Constitution. It was never ratified. Why did people in the 60s think this was needful? Well, like I said, some felt that women were treated as property, not as a spouse, ought to be treated, so on like that. Women felt repressed. Women felt they needed equal pay for equal performance. If we look back in history, again, we go back to understand even closer history. But in the 40s, the women went to work because the men were at war. Men came home from the war, women kept working. The women didn't get paid as much as the men. And they got all up in the air about this. They also wanted equal education. The women were not always given equal education as men. And so they wanted this equal rights, this gender equality. And of course, then there's just simply the prevalent idea that well-behaved women seldom make history. They wanted to be noticed too. And so they were out shouting around just like everybody else in their own protest. Some people may have protested the war. They were protesting the fact that they weren't treated quite right. What's happening in today's culture that may be similar to this equal rights agenda? Just last year, in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health, the decision Roe versus Wade protected the right for abortion, Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health, overrode that. And so that is no longer constitutionally protected. States may give that right, but it's not nationwide anymore. And now some of those women are all up in the air because now they can't get the same, they don't have access to the same health care that they think men have. There's lots of dispute about that. I went to Mennonite Church USA website, and they have a program called Women in Leadership. And here's what they have to say about that. It says, Women in Leadership works to dismantle patriarchal systems in Mennonite Church USA by empowering women to live out the call of God on their lives, increase their capacities, and contribute their wisdom in congregation, area conferences, and agencies and institutions. This is current in Mennonite Church USA. Of course, we have women in politics. We have women who are going to college and becoming professionals, and then they end up being the breadwinner, you might say, of the household. And men might stay home and take care of the children and so on. What's God have to say about all this? That's the question. What does God have to say, and how are we as Mennonites responding to this upheaval in society around us? This afternoon, we talked about not going to protests and so on. So that's automatically on the checklist. We don't do that. We're not going there. You can open your Bible to Matthew 19, verse 4. Pharisees had come to Jesus, tempting him. In verse 3, it says, they asked, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?" And he answered, Jesus answered these Pharisees, and said unto them, "Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And he said, For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." Like to think about four fairly obvious facts right here. God made a gender distinction. Okay? It's just a given. We know that. We need to reiterate that to our people over and over. Because there's lots of gender confusion out there these days. But there's just a difference between men and ladies. That's what God says. He made them male and female. Another thing, God blessed a heterosexual marriage. That's another thing with all this gender confusion. That's a very obvious fact here. God said this is a good thing. Another thing we see, God intended for this to be a mutually beneficial relationship. Our ladies are not just the property of the man that they get married to. Okay? So, what's the big push about equal rights? We shouldn't be hearing that in our churches today. And I haven't. I'm not here saying that this has got to go, because I don't know that it has to go necessarily, because it's not here. But we need to be taught about these things. Women are not just our property. They're one with their husband. We can't treat them as inferior just because they're women. And then the fourth obvious fact, marriage is for life, okay? And that brings a lot of security to men and to ladies. That's one of the things that I believe spurred this equal rights push. The women in the world did not feel secure in their relationship with men. They didn't feel secure in their relationship with God, and so they had to push their own way. I believe that security that is provided through marriage helps us to keep our roles in the proper light. What about what Mennonite USA website said there? You know, what was it? They wanted to dismantle patriarchal systems. They wanted to empower women. They wanted to increase their capacities and so on. Is that what we want? Let's go to 1 Timothy 2. And I know that website didn't necessarily say we want women preaching, but we know that that's happening in society around us. The women are getting up and preaching, and that's all part of this empowering and the women contributing their wisdom in congregations, area conferences, and so on. 1 Timothy 2, verse 11, "Let the woman learn in silence with all subjection. But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. For Adam was first formed, then Eve. I will, therefore, that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully." When we both men and ladies, when we take our places, there it just cuts down on that the possibility of ridicule for our churches. We don't need to fear what people may say. Looking on, it may look as though we repress the ladies because they're not allowed to get up and speak and so on. But as each one takes their place, there's actually freedom comes through that. Adam was first formed, and then he needed a helper, right? And God said, I'll make a help that's meet for you, or that's made for you, that can help you. And as that union goes, as you enjoy that union, your relationship develops, and you can be a powerful testimony to the world around. Titus 2, verse 3, the aged women likewise, that they be in behaviors, becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. So we're not saying our ladies can't teach, but they are to teach in certain ways, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands. Okay, here again, that protection, that security that comes to the ladies as they come under the authority of the man. We'll look a little bit at the headship order here shortly, but that brings a security, and it also enables our ladies to teach each other, right? It says that the older, the aged women can teach the younger women, and so on. And that's all a good thing. We don't repress them so much that they just can't do anything. Ephesians 5. We'll go there. Ephesians 5, and we'll start at verse 22. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word. And so on down through there, we see the headship order there. And if our ladies are going to cry out, that's not fair, because they can't do whatever out from under their husband's leadership, then men start crying out, that's not fair, because they can't make decisions without God approving. Okay? Why can't I make a decision without God approving if she can make a decision without me approving? And it's just a vicious cycle. When we understand and practice the headship order, it's a blessing to everyone. It really is. In fact, sometimes it's almost easier for me to say, that's not fair. I have to make the decisions. Why can't you make the decisions once? Okay? It's just confusion when we step outside of God's roles, though. Again, when the ladies felt repressed, they started elbowing their way out through, you might say. And the truth of the matter is, we husbands are told to love our wives. And I know I'm speaking to a bunch, primarily youth, who are not married, but Take heed. When you get to that point, if God leads you to that point, love your wife as your own body. Don't treat her as something way less than you. Be understanding of the difference in the biological makeup, the physical makeup of your wife. And truth be told, a lot of these things about being understanding about your wife really even applies to you being understanding about the limitations of your sister at home, your mother at home. These things really do apply, because when you can lead out in a way and be helpful in such a way that's not repressive, it brings honor to God. Now, I don't know if you've ever, how many of you ever heard of Johnny Lingo's eight-cow wife? Okay, a few of you have. Okay, I think it brings out a good illustration. I can't just repeat the story verbatim how I heard it, but basically this visitor had gone off to an island somewhere, and he heard of this Johnny Lingo, and people just kind of, Johnny Lingo, you know. Well, what about Johnny Lingo? Well, he got married last year. Yeah, okay. So what about it? He paid eight cows for his wife. It, obviously, a little different culture than what we're used to. But he paid eight cows for his wife. Well, the visitor knew just enough about it that, you know, two, three cows was a mediocre wife. Four cows, you were getting something pretty special. Oh, really? Eight cows for Johnny paid eight cows for his wife. Yeah, crazy guy. What's wrong with that? What was she like? Might be nice if you'd say she was plain. She kind of walked around with stooped shoulders. Her head was always down. Why would you pay eight cows for something like that? Okay, well, whatever. Yeah, it kind of mystified him, but he went off to find Johnny Lingo. Johnny Lingo could show him this or that. I forget what it was, but this visitor went to find Johnny Lingo, and I met him at home and sat down, and okay, so this is Johnny Lingo. Yeah, and he heard, Johnny said, so hey, where'd you hear about me? Oh, back on the other island. Okay, yeah, do they talk about me much there? Yeah. They said something about you over there. Okay, and pretty soon this respectable-looking lady comes into the room and serves them some cold water or whatever it was, you know, some refreshing drink. And, you know, she paused just a little bit, made a little connection with him, went on her way, and, oh, wow, who's this? Well, that's my wife. What? They said your wife was kind of plain, kind of, you know, not really with it. And, well, did you ever think about it? If you were really worth two cows and you got, and somebody paid eight cows for you, you think about how that changes your outlook on life. Think about that. Johnny Lingo loved his wife so much. He didn't want a two-cow wife. He didn't want a one-cow wife. He wanted an eight-cow wife. And from day to day, today, she was talked about that Johnny paid eight cows for her. She must be worth something. And it lifted her spirit. And that's what equal rights is all about. Really, equal rights is about these ladies that felt repressed, felt pushed down, and men not taking care of their wives. I really think that's why the push for equal rights came about. And of course, it goes way wider than what the original intention might be. And things get out of hand in all of these protests and so on. But let's think about it. If we as men take our place in loving and properly treating the ladies in our life, then we don't have to deal with upheaval and protest and so on. Let's take our place in defeating equal rights cry, and let's just treat them like they ought to be, like God intends us to love them. Biblical, mutually beneficial community gender roles. Nuclear family. We talked about that being previous to the 60s. Father, mother, children, all in the home, working together, doing things as they ought to be done, or mothers or ladies taking care of the children while men are out providing for them. It's your biblical and biological role. That's what God calls you to do. Men, care enough about your wife or the ladies in your life, whoever that may be, sisters, mother, take care of them. And we won't need this whole cry about equal rights. God bless you as you fit into God's role for you.